now, joining us in the studio to talk plenty of rugby league. The off-season never sleeps. Dean Bulldog Ritchie, morning to you, mate.
Morning, Mido. Laurie, Clarkie, great to be in here once again. Albeit the off-season, there's plenty of rugby league. And I'm excited, though, about the Ashes loss.
Oh, I know you are. I know you love your cricket,
Bulldog. I love my test cricket. There is only one real form of cricket that we are judged by, Clarkie, and that's the red ball. Mm-hmm. As much as we love the T20 and the 50-over one-day World Cup wins, it's only really one form of cricket that you remember.
Oh, yeah, the 50-over. We've got a great legacy in 50-over cricket, though.
But when you talk talk test cricket.
Yeah. I mean, the one player you could argue, Michael Bevan, made himself, you know, huge name out of his exploits in 50-over. But you're right. Generally speaking, it's the greatest test.
Who's your favourite Bulldog?
Favourite
cricketer?
Cricket player?
Mm. Australian.
I always loved Steve Waugh. I loved his tenacity and loved his toughness. I grew up on Dennis Lilly. He's still arguably the greatest. And then, of course, you came through the Waugh-McGrath era. They took about 1,000 wickets between them, an average of about 21, 22, which is just extraordinary.
Have you got a favourite Ashes moment?
Favourite Ashes moment? We asked this on the Sunday show last week, Loz, and there were plenty of memories. The one that sticks out, which I don't particularly like, was 81, 82, 82, 83, when Geoff Thompson nicked. I think it was to Tavare who dropped it. Geoff Miller caught it off both of them. We lost that test by 3 runs. So that was one I didn't particularly like. And I think probably it was a little bit before me, but I loved the Dougie Walters 6 off the last ball in Perth in 74-5. And he just put the bat under the arm, a la Dougie style, and just walked off into the dressing room. And, of course, Steve Waugh's 100 in Sydney, I think, in 03.
Mm. Yeah, Warnie's hat trick for me. Just, you remember as a kid where you were, time and place. That was a great moment, wasn't it? But hopefully there's a few more made the next series.
Oh, I've got so many. I don't think I've got a favourite Ashes moment. I just love the cricket starting. So I can sit in front of the television all day and watch every ball, yet I can't watch a full game of T20. Doesn't excite me. Mm. But the kids would... Some of the kids would prefer to watch a T20 than the test match. Yeah. But I'm still old school.
Do you think Clarkie's greatest Ashes moment would be about himself?
Oh, please. It wasn't many great ones for me, Bulldog. I won, in Australia, there were. We won. I was a part of two teams that beating on 5-0. But unfortunately, England was the only country I never won the series. Every other country I went to, I won the series. But not in England. So, yeah, there's some great memories, but there's some scars as well. My two, Shane Warne's ball to bowl Michael Gatting was as special as a youngster as you got. And then I idolised Michael Slater as well growing up as a kid. So watching Slats score that 100 over in England and the way he took the England bowlers on, that was pretty special as well.
What was your favourite 100 against the Poms? Was there one meaningful one that you can remember that you knew you had to get a score? And
I think that my first, we went Gabba first test and I only batted once. I think I got 50 odd. And this is, I'd just been dropped.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And it was my first series back
in
the team. And I got 100, I think, in the second test at Adelaide. So that was pretty special after, you know, when you get dropped, you don't know if you're going to get another chance. So to be called back into the team against England in Australia and then to make 100 to sort of cement my spot was pretty special.
What about Mitchell Johnson in 13-14, 37 wickets at 13.9. Yeah. That, Clarkie, was just sustained brutality. Well, that was more brutal to me than Geoff Thompson. Because he did it over 5 tests.
Well, that was my most special series, and it was because of what we did as a team. So Mitch got the rewards, but I can tell you now, Ryan Harris, Peter Siddle, Nathan Lyon, Shane Watson, without what those boys did, I wouldn't have been able to use Mitchell the way I did, and he wouldn't have been able to have so much gas in the tank. You know, we had a really set plan that Mitch was going to bowl short spells. Even if he got a wicket, he was only going to bowl a 2 or 3 over spell, and I was going to drag him. And that took some tough conversations as well, because he was on fire. I didn't want the ball taken out of his hand, but we had a set plan. And the other thing we did, we said from number seven walks into bat, we're not pitching the ball up. We're going to be extremely aggressive, bowl back of a length, and get England the England tail caught, whether it's bat pad, fine leg, third man off the gloves. We had a real aggressive approach to stick it up their tail. And the boys certainly didn't disappoint, that's for sure.
Their tail looked petrified. Petrified.
Mate, so would I. So would I with Mitchell Johnson.
You know, we went through it one day at the newspaper and we counted 20 English people lost their job through Mitchell Johnson. He basically dismantled their entire system. But 20 officials / players were basically dropped or lost their job through that series. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah, I don't think we've had a cricketer ever like Mitchell Johnson, considering Clark, you obviously there in 2009. There were points there and during the Ashes in England. Didn't look like he could hit the pitch.
Well, he couldn't. That was true. Yeah, again, you talked to Mitchell about, like, now he probably speak about it more openly, but the Barmy Army destroyed him at one stage. Mm. He just, everything they said just affected him, and he couldn't concentrate, and he got the yips, and he didn't know where it was going. You know, and I think, you know, Mitch was quite extreme in when it was bad, it was real bad. When it was good, it was unbelievable. But Starkey's got a bit of that in him as well. You face Starkey in the net, you don't know if it's going to hit the side net or smack you in the helmet. But when he gets it right, my God, 145, 150K left arm inswingers. And even when it's not, that's the difference in Australia. You might see Starkey use his short ball a lot more. So when he bowls round the wicket, angle into a right-hander at your ribs at 150Ks, it's not a nice place to be as a batsman.
Is that one of the reasons, Clarkie, you reckon people don't see them as being that sort of tough, aggressive front, like front-line bowler, and they're always into them, is because they don't give mouthfuls to the opposition and stand in the middle of the pitch and sort of look at and stare.
Mitch used to give it to him. Don't worry about that. But I think it's because they're inconsistent. I think, you know, if you think of, again, if we say, you know, the best two bowlers I ever played with, Glenn McGrath and Shane Warne, they were so consistent, not only with the way they bowled, but every game. It felt like every game they got wickets. They just about did, but it was because day in, day out, consistency, consistency, consistency. With Mitchell Johnson and Mitchell Stark, when they're on, they'll rip you apart, take 5, 6, 7 in an innings and destroy you. But then you might go two games where they, you know, go for more runs than what you might expect. But if you have a look at their records, they're very good.
It's the Golf Lovers Christmas at Drummond Golf with great savings on a huge range of gift ideas for the golfer in your life. Every player needs a rangefinder. The Target Caddy TC200 is now $199. Save over $100. Cougar Tri-Wheel Buggy, just $119.95. Save over $20. Or a 12-pack of TaylorMade V3 Distance Balls, just $29.95. See the online catalogue for more Golf Lovers Christmas savings at drummondgolf.com.au. Dean Bulldog Richie joining us in the studio from the Daily Telegraph. And Bulldog, the big news yesterday that the Bulldogs have parted ways with John Asiata. And talking before, put it to Loz, I just, as a player, I can't understand. And, you know, he's got every right to make his own choice. But to put, I guess, a stake through your own career by not getting vaccinated when you get, you know, this finite period to be able to play professionally in footy for John Asiata. I just can't understand it. Like, there you are, 28 years of age, a chance to play in the NRL. No, I'm not getting vaccinated, so I'm not playing footy.
It's certainly, excuse me, a strange decision. He's on about, $180,000 to $200,000 a year, Meadow. Not huge money in terms of rugby league these days, but still a very handsome wage compared to the average Australian. As far as I know, John's family back in Tonga, I think I've got that right, had some bad experiences.
Okay.
And that's filtered through to John, who's now extremely reluctant, as we know, to get the jab. I like Canterbury's stance. I think they've been clear and they've been strong from the start. No jab, no play. Other clubs aren't quite that strong just yet in terms of their policy. The NRL, of course, haven't made it mandatory just yet, but I respect the Bulldogs. They've said to him, either you get a jab or you're not playing. And let's not forget here, it's not just about John Asiata missing 2, 3, 4 games next year that might be in Queensland or Melbourne. That's 4 games that his teammates have to suddenly find a replacement for, and that's just not fair. He wanted to go and work on a job site, a building site, and I think the Dogs said, well, if that's what you want to do, you know, go and do that. However, you will need to be vaccinated to get on there as well.
Bulldog, does that put the teams under pressure? The fact that the NRL hasn't come out and made a stance against it, they've left it to the clubs to make their decision. Does, like in this instance, does that put, you know, do the Bulldogs cop criticism for this? Would you prefer it this way, or would you prefer, like the AFL, where they've just come out and said, this is how it is?
The clubs were hoping that the NRL would make it mandatory, Clarkie, and take it out of their hands.
Yeah.
They sort of figure, you know, why should it be our decision when it should be the governing body's decision, where the NRL are saying, well, look, we don't want to mandate it. I've got to say this very delicately. There's a lot of Polynesians in the game, and a lot of them are concerned, Clarkie, about the jab. Mm. And that's why the NRL is just a bit softly in their approach. So they've left it up to the clubs, and each club is approaching it differently. Mm. I know certain clubs, like at the moment, Melbourne haven't sacked Nelson Asofa Solomona. They're waiting. They're hoping it'll resolve itself.
Are they waiting for this? Are they waiting for one club to jump? Now the Bulldogs have done it. Will every other club look to see what the criticism's like? If it's okay, then will they not jump on board anyway?
Yeah, they may well. It probably depends on the standard of the player as well.
Well, that's what I was getting at Bulldog earlier this morning with Nelson. If Melbourne can't have Nelson playing for them this season and they release him, surely a club here in Sydney will pick him up, knowing that he's going to miss some games, but he'll add value to their roster in certain games and could be the difference between them winning a premiership and not. Surely they'd take a punt on picking him up.
They would and they could, but that would also mean a fairly substantial pay cut for Nelson, as long as he's prepared to take a financial shave. Look, I'm sure some clubs would do it, but if you are unavailable for four games and there are times when you can't train with the team, clearly you are becoming...
But that puts Melbourne at a disadvantage.
It does. Look, he can't even... Melbourne's rules are more strict than here in New South Wales, Laurie. He can't even train with the Storm.
That's exactly right.
So it's clearly untenable. He cannot beat the Melbourne Storm unless he gets the jab. I don't see a problem myself. It's pretty simple. You roll your arm up, you get the jab, you move on. But, yeah, others aren't like that, and I respect that for whatever reasons, whether it's religious or personal. I'm not here to, influence or tell people what they should do with their private life. But to me, if you've got a very lucrative career and only goes for 7, 8, 9 years, I cannot see why a 5-second jab would be the thing that destroys that career. And this is what's happening.
Mm. Yeah, it's a big one. It's a big decision that Melbourne and the NRL and the Players Association are obviously looking at the moment, because of the importance of, you know, having these players available. If they're not available to you and you've got them on your books, how can you sack them? You know, do you have to pay them out? Do you get to try and, get relief on your salary cap? All the ramifications of having someone on your books that doesn't want to get jabbed, where does it leave a footy team? Where does it leave a footy club? So that's something that Melbourne will have to work out, and hence one of the reasons why they're keen to keep Brendan Smith. Now, Brendan Smith has been in the paper for a while now, since the end of the season. He had his first day back at training yesterday with Melbourne. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting between he and Craig Bellamy.
Yeah, Bellamy was clearly filthy, and rightly so, about how it all unfolded, the podcast, the language, the way he spoke about this perceived alcohol problem inside the Storm camp, which is rubbish from what I can understand. Look, I spoke to some people in and around Melbourne late last week, Loz, and they said, you know what? He stuffed up. He stuffed up big time, but do we cut off our nose to spite our face? Do we sack him now and say, get out? Or do we say, get your butt in here, explain yourself, say sorry, and we've still got one more year to go? And that's how it's going to unfold. Four clubs approached Melbourne asking for a player swap, and the four players that were offered up from the individual clubs weren't up to the standard of Brendan Smith. Melbourne then quite cheekily did say, look, how about we ask for another player? And that was denied. So in the end, it will be that Brendan Smith, unless something amazing happens in the next 24 to 48 hours, he will be at Melbourne Storm for next year.
Parramatta, you've written today that the fledgling club has formally offered a deal to Junior Paulo. And this comes after, the news that Ray Stone has signed with the Dolphins for season 2023. Now, if Parramatta lose Junior Paulo, surely the cons would outweigh the pros as far as their off-season of the retention of players is concerned. This is crucial.
It is crucial. Look, they lost already Papalihi, Murata Nuakora, and of course Reid Marnie. So there's three that have gone. Yesterday was Ray Stone in isolation. In isolation, Ray Stone isn't a massive loss, but it is player number four. And I did a bit of digging around yesterday, and the Dolphins have ramped up their interest in Junior Paulo, and now they have lodged an official contract offer for him. I'm hearing it would span 3 years. It would be quite lucrative. He's on about 700 now. So for them to lure him north, he might even be able to pinch a few more bucks. So if the fifth forward leaves Parramatta, it does put them in crisis, in my eyes. In terms of the fans, I think that the Eels are in damage control if Junior Paulo goes. He has to be re-signed. They've just got to find a way to keep Junior Paulo.
Yeah. I think you've got to keep him, but again, it comes down to your price. I mean, are you going to pay $1 million for Junior Paulo?
Well, if the other forwards have left, Laurie, surely there is money there for Junior Paulo.
Yeah, but Mitchell Moses might have been, been increased. I don't know. There's other players on their roster. I'd keep Junior Paulo, all right? So I'm a massive fan. But again, you can't go paying way overs just to keep him, because if you do that at some stage at the back end or, 2 years, 18 months down the track, you're in a world of hurt. You're in a world of hurt when you start paying overs.
I guess it's a perception players. Thing too, isn't it? For the fans to think that we've got this side that was in a week or two of the grand final again, and we've lost four, maybe even five players or forwards.
Yeah. Penrith, for instance. They've had success. Yeah, they've had to lose Burton. They've had to lose Kickout. They're losing Coruscant. You can't keep these players at your club when they start to shine in big games and they're playing representative football and they're coming off contract. It's difficult to keep them all.
At least Penrith won the comp. They've got something for it.
Yeah, and who's to say Parramatta won't win it this year?
But, Loz, isn't that more reason that you don't want to have so many players coming off contract at the same time? Like, surely you've got to find a way to stabilise that so you're not at risk of losing, eight players in one go.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point, Pup. And I think they tried to maybe sign a few of those players before it got to this stage. But if you were managed smartly, knowing that a new team was coming into the competition, you would have held back. You wouldn't be in that rush to re-sign a new deal, knowing that another team is going to come in and have all this money to spend. I think you'd be doing your client a disservice if you didn't sit back and wait to see what you would be able to get for him on the open market with this new team being announced in the Dolphins. Talking about the Dolphins, Bulldog, I keep hearing Kalyn Ponga.
Yes, it's certainly a rumour that won't go away. It'll be the money. There's suggestions of $1.5 million. I can't condone that. I think that's crazy money. But they need this marquee player, Laura. We spoke about it last week. They need this superstar who can be the face of the club. Kalyn Ponga is presentable. He's a good-looking rooster. He's a superstar. He's the one that will be the face of the club. He'll be the one that promotes all the merchandise, membership drives, etc., etc. Do you take the punt, Laurie? Do you say, OK, we need you. We're a fledgling club. We will pay you 1.5. Damn it. We'll probably lose money at it in the end, maybe on the field, but off the field, we may come out OK.
Well, that's what you've got to weigh up. You look at what the Sydney Swans have done with Buddy Franklin. People will say that Buddy Franklin going to the Swans hasn't been a success because they haven't won a flag, yet the Swans could justify that they've increased their memberships, they've increased their sponsorships, they've...
Media exposure.
Yeah, all that type of stuff. So it's how you sort of package it. But I think that they really need a high-profile player, other than the ones they're talking to at the moment, to sell and give the franchise hope. Now, whether that's a Kalyn Ponga or a Munster the next year or Harry Grant, but they need someone big, in my eyes.
And just briefly before you go, Bulldog, you've also written in today's Telegraph under the headline, Cows Want Leilua Now. So North Queensland, who have signed Luciano Leilua for 2023, are set to formally request a player swap potentially?
Yes, what's happened, Mido, they want to make contact with the Tigers this week just to see where the situation is with Luciano. They want him now, the Cowboys. They've got money in their salary cap to sign him now. Of course, he did secure that 3-year, $2.1 million deal from 2023. Look, it's up to the Tigers now whether they want to release him for whatever reason. His contract does go to about $6,650 next year. So whether Tim Sheens thinks that they'll get value out of him for 1 year at that cost, or whether it's worthwhile saying, OK, you've signed for the following year, go now. We can save a lot of money. We can go and get a couple of young kids.
Now, what's this about New Zealand, the New Zealand media, actually? Are they reporting that Wellington and Christchurch are favourites for expansion?
Yeah,
is that just because they're over there and they're building it up, or is that something that you've heard here in Australia as well?
Well, it's not something I've heard in Australia, Loz, but yeah, there's some media reports over there running through the entire NRL process over there. The story actually was based around how the NRL wanted to take over the All Blacks, which I found a little strange, given the All Blacks brand over there is so powerful, and I don't think rugby league will ever take over. But they're suggesting that in the story that Wellington and Christchurch are favourites for expansion. Look, I don't know that. The last I checked, the NRL hadn't even approved an 18th franchise. We haven't even got the 17th franchise on the field just yet. But look, if it comes down to 18, I'm not suggesting that it shouldn't be over there. I think it's certainly got merit. The Bears, obviously, are the ones that I would like to see back in.
They're my favourites. I think you've got three people on this panel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perth, obviously, is another one that would be an option, a worthy option, and Wellington and Christchurch. But yeah, I'm a Bears man. I'd like to see them come back. I think the new proposal they're working on works in that it can be played in Sydney and take the game rural, which is what we want. But yeah, look, it's certainly worth a debate, Wellington or Christchurch. The only concern I've got is that the Warriors have been I'm not going to say a disaster, but just one level above a disaster since 1995. And if that's the prototype to bring in a new club, you know, maybe there should be some long and careful debate.
They're going to have to reconsolidate themselves when they can go home to New Zealand, the Warriors, as well. So, Bulldog, you carpooling on Friday?
Oh, I am carpooling. Yeah, the Christmas party's on. I'm worried about you.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. You've been off the booze for a while because of your op and you've got a glint in your eye.
He really does, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He's pumped up off air. He's out there doing a little dance, ready to go.
I've shredded too.
I don't want this to be front page.
I was filthy yesterday when Buzz told me Clarkie had a bit of rig.
Everything's off the record, by the way, at the Christmas party.
I
when
just
you
see Saturday
morning. When you got Widler and Rothfield in the same room. Seriously. Now, Will's walking in. We've got to go. Good on you, Bulldog.
Thanks for having me.